Thank you for listening, and welcome to When Pigs Fly. Talk from the heart, the mind, and the soul. And I'm your host, Andrew Fetter. Shortly, and when she does, I will be playing that tunes as well. I mean, it's just fascinating. It's great stuff. And I want to welcome you again. This is Andrew Fetter to When Pigs Fly. And, you know, it seems like every day is a special day, and I have a very special guest coming on. But before I do, I also have to announcement for a couple shows lining up. One of which is on next week, on January 29th, with Mick Quinn, who is author of The Uncommon Path of Awakening and Authentic Joy. And that will be quite extraordinary because he is very proficient and well-known and has a plethora of knowledge and wisdom. And I can't wait to have him on my show for you listeners, or I should say our show, because it's basically I feel it's ours. And then, of course, I have lined up on February 12th for Valentine's Day, special prior Valentine's Day, Joan Newcomb, who is author of Tapestry of Time, and which I look forward to, and she'll be discussing how our past lives and how they encounter today with perhaps our soulmates or people we encounter. So that should be quite extraordinary. But without further ado, I have, like I said, a very, very special guest. I've been trying very diligently to get her on my show. She is an esteemed yoga master to the degree. She utilizes within her yoga not just the physical forms of people, common denominators, with effervescence to it. And with that, I welcome Andrea Teja. How are you doing today?
Hi, I'm feeling really good. How are you?
Doing great. So, I know we're calling from over the pond to the other side, and I know my listeners are wondering, who is Andrea and what she's all about? Because I know they looking on you and your scope of things that, you know, you have such a resume of yoga and studying many, not just yoga, but many mastering of spiritual items. It's like a multiple piece degree here. I was like, wow. Can you tell a little bit about yourself and then how you came into your involvement with both yoga and your spiritual activities?
Sure. Well, first of all, thank you very much for inviting me, for giving me the opportunity to come on your show and to talk about this. Basically, my work really is about inviting people to remember the relationship that they have with themselves. It's heart-centered recognition of one another from out the truth of our being. And my main aim is really just to be here to assist where I can, in the return of honoring this heart wisdom. You know, we all have this, but often we're so bombarded with lots of information. So it's really simple, actually. The path is very, very simple, but it can sometimes look very complicated. And right now we're creating a new way on Earth. And what's really needed for each of us to make this radical internal change, if we wish to see the change that we long for in our lives and in our world, is to really get down to working with our own, you know, with ourselves. So that's what my work really is based on.
What made you get into starting this, getting into yoga and getting into your spiritual activities? I mean, what's your background as far as getting into all that?
Well, I believe that that was right back from as far as I can remember. I was always questioning the meaning of life and why we're here, what's the point of all this, and the questions were constant right through my childhood and all the way through until I got to about 25 when I became intolerant to certain food substances, and that drew me more into finding my truth through the practice of yoga. I tried many different therapies, and I found that yoga was the one that really brought me home. It gave me the ability to heal myself as opposed to looking for somebody else to do the work for me, and I believe that that's how healing does take place. You know, it's about empowering ourselves to do the work that's necessary. There's no shortcuts there. You know, often people look for somebody else to give them the answers, but really the answers are within. So that's basically how I come to yoga, and that, you know, that's what I base my teachings on too.
So you utilize your yoga to basically to actually self-healing, basically, and empowering the person. It seems to be almost like, I know you do Reiki, so it's almost like you do, it's almost like a self-Reiki treatment. Is that what you're implying?
Well, it's a kind of inner alchemy. There's a transformation that happens when we, that is assisted, it's assisted through yoga and through meditation. And particularly when we place our well-being as a priority. So the great thing is we get to choose where we place our thoughts and our energy, and anything that causes us to overthink, which based on the past or future events, all this can be easily transmuted by the simple practice of the present time location of our breath. You know, where we place our awareness and focusing on our breath is one of the most simple things that we can do to bring us back into the present moment. And and then healing takes place because we're not dispersing our energies out there as such. We're kind of drawing it back into ourselves.
You incorporate, I noticed that you incorporate multiple styles. Like, I know you have Hatha yoga and other styles that I've noticed. What are the styles that you
incorporate? Infinite Space uses Moon Cycle Yoga, which is basically a combination of Hatha Yoga, Laya Yoga, which is the understanding of the chakra system and the use of the chakra system, and obviously the moon phases, which is why I've called it Moon Cycle Yoga.
So would you say you're like the Bruce Lee of yoga?
Oh, I don't know about that. I'm just doing what the ancients did.
Well, though, like Bruce Lee, he incorporated all these martial arts together and adapted them to the person. And it seems like you've made the style of yoga to adapt to the individual as opposed to the individual trying to adapt to the yoga, it seems like.
That's a really beautiful way of expressing it through Bruce Lee. I mean, that's a real honor. Basically, when I was studying my yoga for myself, there's one aspect which is based on self-study. So I started getting more involved in finding out as much as I can about the blueprint or the energy that I came into this world with, which is basically the natal chart. So I started studying a little bit of astrology, but then decided I didn't want to go too deeply into that, and just found that if I just looked at where the moon, because the moon is very influential on our planet and of course on our bodies as well, it affects the water element, and
we're made up of mainly water.
Yeah, mainly water. So our emotional body is affected by the movement of the moon. And it kind of fascinated me, really. I came to a place where I was just able to look at where the moon phase, where we were at, and what sign the moon occupied. And, of course, the body, the physical body is...
So do you go in your moon cycle yoga, do you do it, I know those particular phases of the moon, you do different things during the phases of the moon, is that what you do, like if it's a new moon, you do...
Yeah, there's a specific practice for, which combines the phase of the moon with the chakra system, and if it can get even more in depth, if I do a personal one-to-one practice, then I will look at somebody's natal chart, and I will bring out the practices that will affect the body. Because when we're working with Hatha Yoga, the postures are their gestures, their attitudes.
I'm sorry to go over top of you there, but you're saying that you incorporate their astrology to their what they do as far as the yoga.
On a personal one-to-one level, in a general class, it's a little bit difficult to bring them the zodiac into the class because everybody's
different.
Got their own
makeup.
But on a one-to-one level, I can give specific practices that will help the individual with it. You know, it's just basically understanding where our strengths and our weaknesses are. And shining light on the weaknesses, if you like. Once the light is there, once there's an understanding, then it's pretty much healed. What I'm saying is that the Hatha yoga postures are their attitudes that the body understands. Their messages that go beyond the use of words. And a lot of people go to a Hatha yoga class, but this understanding is they go there maybe to shape up their bodies, but not really understanding that the postures that they're putting themselves into are actually sending a message straight to your mind, and your mind and your body and your breath and your nervous system are all connected, so it's affecting a very deep level by placing the body in a specific posture.
So by placing the body in a posture instead of just the mechanics of obviously it gets you physically in a really well manner, it actually creates sort of like an energy system within your pattern, and therefore it creates a new, it's almost, can you give me an example of like a position that you would do in Hatha yoga, or what kind of energy level would that create in that situation?
Sorry, what kind?
Like if you were doing, like you were just saying, if you go into a position, right? And let's say if you can name just an example of some position that you would go into, and then instead of just a mechanical form, like you just said, that somebody just does it because they think that's good for their body, which it is. But so let's say if you, you can give me an example of one.
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden they're in that. What would that amplify?
Well, so for instance, the warrior pose is, one that when you come into the warrior pose, it's the message that you're sending throughout your body is that you're confident, you're strong, you're powerful, and you're kind of aligning yourself to your own inner power. That's the message that you're portraying beyond words. It works in this way that the body is the entrance point, if you like. It's the entrance point to the soul, and the breath is the key as well that takes you into the inner realm. But really.
So when you get yourself in that position, you're like doing a certain kind of breathing technique, or you get into this meditating. You get into, like, in my style, what I do is I go into the, what they call the non-thought, go into beyond what in Taoist called the beyond the Tao, beyond the empty
world. Yeah, that's a high form of yoga, yeah.
So do they go into this, is that the point where you go to when you're in that state, or
Hatha yoga, a lot of people, they skip Hatha yoga and they just go straight into, like, meditation, and it's very effective. If you can use the power of your mind, if you're very good at focusing and directing your energy around your body, then that's great. But, the physical postures that we do, the asanas, the postures, they're there to cleanse and purify the nadis, which are the meridians around the body. You're actually sending energy around the body. So that's where Hatha yoga is very, very useful. But you're quite right in saying that, you can go into a meditation and direct energy around the body. In that position,
let's say you said like the warrior position, and then you start meditating in that position.
Yeah, you can say an affirmation. You can I often, have the affirmation, I am powerful, or, I reclaim my power now. You're kind of just drawing it back to back into yourself and feeling the power of it. It does build up your confidence.
What's the difference in Hatha and Raja and Ashtanga? And then there's that other one, I think, that's real popular in California, or in the U.S. and California, And in Las Vegas, is when they sit in hot rooms and whatnot. I forget what they call
it. Yeah, the Bikram. They're all just different styles. I mean, they all use physical postures, and you know, they're all different. Raja Yoga is the eight limb yoga, where you kind of go through the stages, working towards samadhi, which is, you know, like the going beyond phase. So that's the eight limbs of yoga. And it's a kind of like more of a study. It's known as the royal yoga. It's the study of the philosophy of yoga as well. But yeah, I mean, going back to what you were saying about the meditations, you've listened to some of Solara's meditations, which are a great key point for this connection process that we're needing to do. We need to kind of have these daily practices where we're addressing things like grounding into the earth and calling back our energy and, you know, just kind of surrounding ourselves in light so that we're, so this healing energy that we're drawing into ourselves, it bounces. So any negativity that's coming towards us, it's just not going to enter our energy field. There are certain things that we can do using the power of the mind to really, really have this firm, established practice. And all of that is taken into consideration when we practice yoga and meditation.
So how do you do the like with the cycles? Like, example, let's say if it's a full moon cycle, for example, is it certain positions you start incorporating, or is it part, or is it meditations, or a mixture of both?
Techniques are very. Well, Moon Cycle Yoga, which is offered through my website, Infinite Space, is just a really simple practice, which, like we've talked about how it abides by the planetary energy and what's happening in the moment. But it uses the moon phases. So, for instance, in the first phase, the new moon phase, we'll be setting intentions and freeing stuck energy. At the next phase, we're cultivating our power for the surge of energy that's needed in order to manifest the intention. And then at the next phase, where we come to the full moon, we're cultivating love and compassion and giving gratitude and thanks. So this is for the gifts that we receive, and it rides well with the law of abundance.
Is it more affirmations as opposed to meditation?
No, it's just taking, these are the themes for the classes as they're set. You know, the final one is harnessing and taking stock of where we've been so that we can use that knowledge for further transformation. So over a monthly period, we're taking into consideration the energies that are at play to complete this cycle. But it can be done in a single day. You know, you can go through this manifestation process every single day. It's just that the way that I teach it at the moment is one theme per week, because the classes that I teach at the moment are only an hour long. My plan is to run workshops and retreats where I can teach these phases. It's a really clear way of understanding energy and how you can use your mind in a way that will transform your life. It is this inner alchemy that I'm inviting people to look at. You know.
So it's sort of like, because I'm sort of trying to get a clear picture. It's like you're not doing affirmations. You're more or less getting into a meditating on those particular areas.
On the new moon phase, because we're moving any stuckness, any stuck energy, it will be quite flowing, quite dance-based, and we'll be working on the lower chakras and grounding energy. And then when we come to cultivating our power, we'd be working on the Manipura chakra, which is at the navel, and, building up this chi, this prana, the stores of prana in our body, needing that surge to bring it up into the heart chakra And at the heart chakra, that's when we give thanks and gratitude for the gifts. And of course, that with the law of abundance, you then attract more back to yourself. So
then you do this about, through meditation or through a particular stances or form or position.
So there is both static and flowing postures that help to focus the mind. We use breath work, mantras. There's meditation, you know, to rebalance the chakra.
Oh,
system.
So you use a combination of a whole bunch
yeah.
So you use like mantras and meditations and positions.
Yeah, there's mantras, there's breath work. We do specific breathing practices on each.
For some reason, I'm thinking you're doing all one. I'm thinking you're in a position and then you're like doing a mantra or doing a meditation while you're in that position for some reason. I don't know why I was thinking that. So then you just do these, so it's basically a common of exercises that you're doing during these particular phases to whatever that particular focus, whether it's like on your, what you're saying, like on your, you know, what particular chakra, let's say if it's your lower chakras or your upper, your heart chakra or whatever, and that phase you're particularly working on, and it's subject to also where the moon is, where therefore it gives that particular energy that you're focusing on.
Assisted by the universal energies. And like I said, if you go into your natal chart, then it gets even more specific than what it can be in a class situation. In a class situation, I just work with the moon phases, but if I'm working on a one-to-one, then I take into consideration the natal chart, which becomes more specific and to your blueprint. And
now, what is Kirtan? Maybe I'm pronouncing it wrong. I'm so bad at pronouncing.
Kirtan is the devotional aspect of yoga where we sing and it's basically chanting God's name and just drawing in the aspect of devotion, which is a high form of humility. Just being
so it's like you're doing a chant of a mantra, basically.
When I use the mantras, I tend to work more with the bija sounds, the seed sounds for the chakras. That's a very powerful way of awakening the chakras and bringing.
Do you ever use Tibetan bowls?
I've got a singing bowl that works on the heart chakra, but I'd like to do more with sound. I'd like to collaborate with people that do sound and energy work in that way.
Like Tibetan bowl, when they, you know.
Yeah, like the Tibetan bowls and the, you know, the percussion. I like drumming as well. I like the.
If you utilize that, because I use that a lot for myself personally, but.
Oh, do you? You work with the singing bowls.
Yeah, I know Steve called singing bowls. I remember when I had to take, because I knew somebody up in San Francisco was a famous.
Do you have a series of bowls, or have you got just the one that you work with?
Well, I don't even have a bowl. I use actually someone who created it. She's actually a healer up in San Francisco, and I got hold of her CD, and that's what I usually use when I'm sort of like, let's say if I want to be Andy's lazy way of healing himself instead of going out. I usually go out and try to heal myself. So if I don't want to do that, then if I feel like I said, Andy's lazy way of doing it, and that means I'll just... If I don't have like a Reiki something, that's like for me, lazy. That's like, okay, I'm sitting back, let you do the work.
Do you actually feel the resonance in each of the chakras? Does it go through the chakra system when you're listening?
Yeah. And what happens, it keeps me, like, it's really good because it's, I'll utilize that because I'll pull out, but it'll allow me to get really quickly grounded. Because my personal situation, because I feel always pulling out, I always try to keep myself grounded. So that's my way of being consistently grounded without being, because sometimes when you go out too much, you come back and you're like, you start sounding like a Daffy Duck, blah, 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 when you're no, because it is. It's like your mind's out there and your body's here and it takes a while sometimes.
Yeah.
So sometimes you don't want to do that too much, and then you can sound like a baffling idiot, and you lose, you're thinking so much already. Some people say, like, sometimes I stutter or whatever, or mumbo. It's because I've been doing a lot of that. So
what happens if you don't have the CD with you? What would you do then to ground yourself?
That's just one elegant way I do it. I mean, if I don't have a CD, then I will just I utilize different methods. I mean, that's like one method I use. I will.
You know the Bija sounds? Have you done the Bija mantras before?
I don't do those mantras. I'll use. In fact, there's one that's actually probably very intense. Actually, it's probably one of the best ways of I find to do healing and not just grounding, just overall. I mean, you're talking. It's like putting the foot to the metal healing, and it's utilizing a Kabbalistical utterances, which actually utilizing. Famous person named Rabbi Abu Lafia's tones that utilize God's name from the Yud Hei Vav Hei, and there's and head movements, and that make increases. But when you do it, it's you can't do it too late because you'll be wired because it brings
all right. I'd like to see that when you come over to London. I'd like to have a.
Yeah.
Really look at that one.
But those are like what I utilize. I was just curious because you sound like you're doing utilizing with the methods of the moon and music and mantras. It seems like that's why I was not being sarcastic. But I mean, it's sort of funny because it's like it is like the Bruce Lee of bringing all kinds of developments. No, it is, and it's really a good thing because it's like. Most people get locked in certain things, you know, like I know people ask me, well, you use just Kabbalah. I mean, I studied Kabbalah, but I also use other methods all the time. Like I'll utilize, like I said, the Tibetan bolt. To me, that's more Taoist or Buddhist. And then if you go like, and you're, what you do, which is more of a yoga or mantras, to me, that's sort of fascinating being utilizing that. So, and to me, it's almost, like, I was, you know, I'm real open to doing stuff like that, too. Or the Native Americans and doing, they do sweat lodges and things like that. There's many methods getting to the same thing, but I found yours so fascinating because it's utilizing such a broad plethora or overview of different elements. Because using, like, several many yogas, and then you're incorporating astrology, which I've never heard anybody ever use, and it's like, which would make totally sense. It's like, why, huh? Why not use that element?
Yeah, I really like working in this way. It's very, very simple because now, I can look at where the moon is, the phase of the moon, and I know exactly what the contents of my class will be. It's a great way of working. I'd recommend other yoga teachers to work in this way as well, you know, just purely because you're aligning yourself with the universal energies and then letting it flow through you. You kind of remove yourself from being the teacher and you let the universe take over. And eventually, you know, people that are practicing this, they are following their intuition. They're getting in touch with that quiet inner voice. It's ever so quiet, that voice. And really, we do need to give ourselves that time to just sit and listen and allow it, you know, to be heard, and then we can flow from that point. And that's the whole point of it, really, you know, getting beyond the technical stuff. It's, we're creating this radiant body and mind and letting the energy flow, you know, dissolving any troubles, any repressed memories from the past, and just cleansing our minds of anxiety, tension, so that we can increase the natural intuition, which is, you know, who we are, really, isn't it?
So, but in your methods, though, it seems like it would be multi-level. I mean, you'd be healing yourself, obviously, and you're increasing your vibration, and then you'd be opening up your chakras. So if you're opening up your chakras, particularly like your third eye chakra, as they say, they call it, then you'd be opening up, which is more your clairvoyant or ability or whatever. And it was sort of interesting you said it because I have my past teacher, Janae Sinclair. She utilized that same sort of thing. It's very similar that she would focus on trying to raise your vibrations to open yourself up.
Yeah. Well, one of my teachers taught that unless you have an open third eye chakra, it's useless trying to balance the rest of them because you need to be able to turn your gaze inwardly. So you need to have the third eye open before you can do any internal work.
Now, do you also do your own? I know that you are practicing Reiki. Do you also do? Besides in your yoga classes, do you perform Reiki classes or?
Yeah, I mean, I did take the path of the Reiki, you know, to become a Reiki master, but I didn't go on to teach or to. I haven't made any money from. Attuning people or teaching Reiki in that way. The main reason that I did the Reiki was to understand energy at that level so that I can use it for my yoga.
Okay, yeah.
So I don't actually attune people, but it comes through my yoga classes. It's like a portal. The energy is, I just kind of remove myself and the energy is channeled through. And we're there together. We're not, there's no, you know, teacher student. It's kind of like we're all tapping in together and we're all, feeling this energy coming through. Well, that's how I see it. I see it more of a circle as opposed to, you know, I'm the teacher, you're the student. It doesn't work.
I got a question.
Like,
do you ever utilize, in your, cause I know you said you do retreats and stuff like that. Do you utilize, I know like individual, like, exercises amongst themselves, and then
there's always modifications because everyone's at a different level, and it's really important actually because I often see people giving themselves a little bit of a hard time if they can't, you know, if their physical body is, especially, you know, as you get older, your body is not so flexible, and it's really important that people don't do that. You know, this is the
It's
about being kind to yourself as well. It's not about, you know, yoga is, happy yoga, it's not about putting yourself and forcing your body. It's more of a releasing. There's a letting go that happens, and that can only happen when you're focused on your breath and you surrender. So, you know, you're kind of getting to understand the movement of the breath, the body is just going to respond to your ability to relax. You know, you can't stretch a tensed muscle. So we find this place of attunement where we're relaxed, and then we allow the body to go into a posture as opposed to, I'm going to go into that, I'm going to force it. It doesn't work. It's totally against the grain if you're forcing your body to do anything. There's no force.
I'm wondering is, do you also do like sort of like a group thing where you utilizing the, like, if let's say you have 10, 20, 30, I don't know how many people, and let's say in a group and you do like on a retreat, who knows how big, and you do, well, 30 would be way really cumbersome, but if you have like 20 people probably, which is a little bit more, and you're able to control it, and then having them doing like a group thing of their energy, so their energy is healing out the whole group.
Yeah, I would work with that kind of energy in the heart chakra week, which would be like the full moon phase. There's, you know, it's about partnerships, about developing love and compassion for yourself and for other people as well. So you see the other as being yourself. So there'd be a partner yoga, would be doing group yoga. It's great, you know, I love when people partner up and we're doing the group work because, you know, the energy is just, you know, they're talking with each other and the energy just completely changes in that space. So that will be allocated to that, you know, the heart chakra.
I understand you do something called satsang. How you pronounce that? I'm probably saying it again wrong. Satsang. What's that?
Satsang. Yeah. That's spiritual gatherings. I've been running monthly gatherings at my home where we come together and we do some breath work and the bija mantras, and then we chant, and then we open the heart and just, you know, it's like a sharing circle where we just speak from the heart, and it's very uplifting to have that group connection, as you said, and normally somebody, you know, we all bring a different vegan food item, and it's always a potluck, and often we end up with a perfect balance between sweet and savory foods. And it's just really, really lovely, a really nice to be not, able to
not
share
your them. Your not your typical salty British food, right?
No, not when we're considering our well-being, no.
No, that's always every joke's about when you go to London, you go, oh my God, London. Yeah, the food, that's the first thing everybody turns their eyes. So basically it's a group's gathering, and you basically, and that's that thing that you do with the kirtan for thing that you were talking
yeah,
about.
Yeah, we do a little bit of kirtan, and we do a little bit of, some people bring their own instruments. We've got a couple of musicians that come along that have a guitar, and the drums come out, and it's just freeing the voice. You know, this is
and you do this once a month?
Yeah, I've been running them once a month for 3 years now.
Wow.
I'm just looking for another venue to host these satsangs at the moment. But yeah, there's a nice thing to do.
Wow.
And, you know, anyone can do that. I mean, I'm planning as well to work with the new moon and full moon meditation groups as well for this year. There's the planetary, the unified field planetary grid where we can meditate at the same time. It's 8 o'clock on the days of the new moon and the full moon. And all around the world, so there's groups coming together to transmit the energy, to tune in, and you know that's the next thing that I've got in place.
I got a question. I have one question for you. Do you utilize when you're doing, whether it's chants or by the mantras or whatever? Do you use a numerological? Like, would you say, we're going to do this 4 times, or you can do this 5 times, or 7 times, or 8 times? Do you have some sort of...
I try to avoid that. I know I have done in the past, but I do try to avoid that now, because it's like you're putting a limit to something. What I tend to do is give them the practice and then ask them to...
No, that's not what I meant like that, but I meant like, because I know it's amongst... amongst Kabbalism and in Native American, what they do is they do certain things, but they'll do it like, I'm going to do this 4 times, and then we do this 3 times. And they have reasons for they do it numerologically.
Yeah.
Or they go into a position for when they'll go like what they call the point to the 4 different directions, or they'll utter something 7 times and move and do it 7 times. Do you do things like that?
There is in the Yoga Nidra practice that I teach, when we're counting backwards, there's specific numbers, it would be like from 108, or it'd be from 27 backwards. And I know that's comes from tantric tradition, and the numbers obviously relate to astrology as well. But no, I don't. So I use it for the Yoga Nidra, but I'm not while I'm actually teaching posture work. I won't give a, you know, if we're doing something dynamic, I won't give an amount of time or how many times to do it. I kind of let the students, or you know, I like the people to find their own way through, to honor the body and listen to their body.
All right, because I was just curious if it. Now, you said Tantra uses numerological sequences.
In Tantra, yeah. What I'm teaching here is not really. I mean, you're saying that it's me putting all this together, but actually, the way I came to it was just, you know, if you go strip everything right back to the, you know, the ancestors, the sages, you know, they would just sit and they would observe the planet, the stars, the planets, and nature. And this is how the posture, you know, the postures and yoga was formed. So there's nothing really new about it. It's very, very old. And, of course, the numerology comes from the universe, doesn't it? It's like sacred geometry and all that. It's these are systems that were formulated through from the universe and creation, from the beginning of creation. Yeah, they do use the numerology and.
Yeah, because I was just curious if they use some sort of numerological systems, because I know in I Ching they do that too, in Taoism. We all know what the inner flow is. Now, you also teach, like, the way to the certain foods to eat, am I understanding? Is that correct? Like, certain foods or something like that?
Yeah, there's, with regards to foods, everything that we eat is going to affect our mind. So, it's pure diet, meaning, you know, as many purifying foods, fruits, vegetables, avoiding things that are overstimulating are really beneficial for yoga.
I'm just getting
involved with the Amazon Herb Company, which, they bring in the superfoods, things like camu camu and acai, and that's going to be something that I'm going to incorporate into the workshops that I'm running, but that's to come. I haven't actually embarked on that yet.
So wait, when you're doing, you're not supposed to eat like spicy food or something? I mean, before you start
but just as long as you know that if you eat spicy foods, that it's going to be very stimulating. So you need to kind of first of all assess where you are. Whenever you're, what I do for myself throughout the day, I mean, I obviously do my daily practice, but then I'm constantly watching myself and giving a little bit of quiet time to see how I actually feel and what my energy is doing. And if I feel that I'm kind of bordering towards, overstimulated and, going towards being a little bit anxious, then there's certain practices and things that you can do to balance the energy and bring it back to this calm state. And of course, if you're feeling a bit lethargic and a bit run down, bordering on towards depression, then there's stimulating things that you can do to bring your energy up. So the first thing you need to do is assess where you're at that moment, and then you've got a whole toolbox of what you can do. So when you're eating stimulating foods, if you're already quite, an active person who, is bordering on towards, being over, towards anxiety, then you would sort of curb that a little bit and kind of...
Like if you got a little ADD in you, then you got...
All these things. In yoga, there's no labels for this disease. It's imbalance. Everything's in balance, which means that you can heal absolutely anything just by understanding the energy body and drawing it back to its natural state. Keeping it balanced. But you've got to be able to know what it is to be unbalanced before you can assess. So, you've got to kind of go through the whole spectrum of the highs and the lows, if you like. You've got to kind of experience it all and then aim for that that middle road, which one of my teachers described as walking on the razor's edge. And it is very much like that, because you can slip either way at any time. And, it's okay. It's okay to slip off. We're not looking for perfection here. We're just recognizing and, having the power to, and through the power of love, actually, because we're doing this for our own well-being. Spending time with yourself is an act of love. Getting to know yourself, your innermost being is an act of love. And, just giving yourself what you need at any given moment, that's how the intuition works when we give it the attention.
So it seems like overall you're just basically developing from your practices, you're developing your self-love, your self-worth, your self, raising your vibration, your healing yourself. There's one reason why we're in these embodiments anyway on this plane, is to give ourselves. And basically, by doing that, you tend to see that by you're around people who, if you're just by your own vibrational levels being what it is, and those people who are around you get a sense of that. It starts affecting the thoughts or things. So if you're projecting those thoughts, then more people are in that positive form, and it seems it'd be like a little a ripple into turned into
absolutely
a tsunami.
Yeah, you've got it. That's absolutely how it works. You know, you come to do your practice. I mean, what is really important, what I would like to say, is that at the times when you do, you know, people obviously get difficult moments in their lives where they do feel stuck, and you can slip back. You know, we've all good intentions. We all have good intentions to discipline ourselves to do the practice, and then something will happen and we're off track. And it's really, really important when you do have these moments, it's important not to panic. You know, it's important not to be serious and to just kind of laugh at yourself. And if there are any mistakes that have happened, you know, in the past, it's important not to give yourself a hard time about them, and just kind of laugh it off and, you know, move on from it. Because what I find is that often people do give themselves a hard time for not getting it right, and that's totally defeating the object as well. So, and it doesn't work anymore. You know, the energies that are coming into, especially now in 2010, it's the year of transparency. You know, there's no hiding anymore. We're returning back to our authentic natural state, and you know, they're really magical times where we get to imagine and feel and sense what our true desire is, you know, from the heart wisdom. And we can base this you can base that on what you really enjoy doing and what patterns need to go for the new energy to manifest, you know, realigning and letting go so that your dreams can come true. And that's all through the power of attraction, you know, just doing what you enjoy, doing what you love, being kind to yourself, and just have fun with it, you know, just feel it and have fun with it.
Oh, it's pretty cool, like you said there. Now, how would our listeners be able to get in touch with you? Because I have listeners who are, like, from all over the world. How would they be able to contact you?
Well, I've got a website, which is Infinite Space, www.infinitespace.com.
But it's spelled with, I know, it's I-N-F-I-N, and then the number 8.
That's right. It's got the number 8,
Babe,
which is the sign for infinity, isn't it?
Yeah. So it's interesting that you use that. So it's INFIN8SPACE.com, infinite
That's
space.
That's right, yes.
And on there, there's the contact, how they can contact you and whatnot.
Yeah, and there will be some retreats and workshops that are coming throughout 2010, but they're
now,
not.
Where do you,
I haven't got them in place right yet.
And you mainly do the retreats up in where? In
yeah, I'm
in,
planning one in Glastonbury for March, weekend retreat, and there's also a retreat to Egypt in October where we practice moon cycle yoga, and hoping to combine a swim with the dolphins as well. So that should be
a swim with the dolphins, huh?
Yeah, yeah. Yeah,
you ever swim with dolphins? You can go to Hawaii for that. In Hawaii, you can go swimming with the dolphins.
Yeah, sure.
That's fascinating. Now, do you plan to do any retreats or things like that to the Far East? Other than
there will be trips to the Far East as well. I'm kind of being guided. You know, part of the practice of yoga is kind of being in the moment. You described it really lovely, about the feminine energy, when we were talking earlier about, you know, the essence of the feminine energy is just being in the moment, isn't it? And allowing.
Yeah, that's technically people don't even like it, with the word even in Kabbalah means to receive, and they call it the Shekhinah, which is the feminine aspect, and that's allowing, and that's the feminine side. When people think the feminine side, it's just, you know, receiving, because there's being the receiving all the information and receiving the energy, and sort of like receiving it, because it's being delegated to us. But we're just
often we can plan things, but I find that through the law of attraction, just kind of in that state that you just described, things kind of opportunities they come, and then you can flow with them. That is what being in the flow with the universe is. You kind of desires are there. And the manifestation process is one where you kind of really set your intentions and you use, you work quite hard with that, visualizing them and whatever your desires are, and then just kind of waiting for the opportunities that will take you in that direction. So India is on the cards. but I'm working more towards, planning the entry.
Egypt. Well, Andrea, I really want to thank you for coming on my show. It's been quite intriguing, and, perhaps I'd love to have you again on my show. For those out there, again, check out her website at www.infinitespace, that's infinite8space.com. Her contact information there has all kinds of stuff. And if you're in the UK, then you definitely got to go to her retreat. Hell, I'm supposed to be heading there in March, so I definitely want to check that out myself. And again, I thank you, Andrea, for coming on my show. It's been quite lovely. And
well,
with that,
thank you
I
so
will
much for having me.
Thank you. And I close with Ruby Freeman's Hang Around, and God bless you all, and have a truly blessed week. Thank you.
I'm busier than you are, so don't expect a call. Everybody wants some, but no one gets it all. So sometimes I wonder, why am I afraid of it all? That's why I let you hang around. You cut the pain in half.